Greetings and salutations, friends and followers of the Lively Arts. This is Jay Michaels here in the Passion Pit, bringing you one-on-ones with some of the movers, shakers, and art makers in the indie scene today. Speaking of today, we're going to chat with two Broadway producers. So why are they here, I hear you ask, on a show that lauds the indie in us all? Because they still walk the walk. Pat Addis and Jim Kierstead workshop productions in the Off-Off-Broadway arena and support indie arts with their plays and their presence. So, ladies first, Miss Pat Addis.
Hello. Hello.
Good morning, Miss Addis.
Yes.
This is Jay Michaels.
Is this Jay?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi, sorry, we were
okay.
11 a.m. today. I hope that's still convenient
that's
for
better.
You.
Okay, fine.
How are you?
So, I'm great. How are you?
Very, very well. If I'm on the line, you're on the air. It's not in real time, so we can edit things out. So that's not we can edit out the intro that I just had there. The reason I invited you on this is because the Passion Pit podcast talks to individuals who support or are part of independent theater. And you're
okay,
one of
you qualify.
Indeed. and you qualify in the special category that there are very few people. You're a Broadway producer. You are
true.
You're up there. And yet you are a very visible name and face within the world of independent theater. You still workshop productions on such levels. And again, in terms of being a visible name, you're a lovely person. We get to meet you. We get to see you. You're on the front lines. Tell us about Pat Addis, the producer and the artist.
Well, I was a mother and I had a husband who was a deadbeat ex-husband and I had earned money for three kids in private school.
Oh my gosh.
In New York. So I started a company called Pat Addis Enterprises, which sold everything with the corporate names and logos. And I did some very unusual things besides the T-shirts and caps and the normal thing, but I did Lilliputian pillows. I did weeds and acrylic tubes for a pharmaceutical company. I did all kinds of unusual, weird, and wonderful things. And I made a career switch when everybody else was dumbing down to not work. And so I started, my first show was Little Women. What happened is I took the CTI course, which stands for Commercial Theater Institute, and I highly recommend it. It gives an overview of what you need to know about the theater. It's just an overview because you graduate and you think you know everything, and of course, like everything, you know nothing.
There you go.
And I took the advanced course, which has only like 25 people in it, and one of the people from it called me and said, how would I like to produce Little Women? And I said, well, I don't know. So we went down to Duke to see it, and I never looked back. And that was my first show, and that was like 15 years ago. And I've been on the accelerated track. And Little Women starred Sutton Foster, and it was just really wonderful, but I knew little about producing, and I think that the lead producers on it made a tragic mistake with closing it when they did, because it was just before all the little kiddies came out of school and wanted to see the show, and it was wonderful and beautiful. And I understand somebody's trying to bring it back again, but I don't know all the details. I just heard that. Anyway, that was my first show, and then right away I did Cheetah Rivera, The Dancer's Life, and then I did Bridge and Tunnel and Spring Awakening, and it went on from there, 39 Steps, Promises.
Which is one of my favorite musicals in the world, so I'm always
Promises
thrilled to hear that.
Wonderful. It was with Kristen Chenoweth.
Right.
And Sean Hayes, and it was, and Katie Finneran, who is still a friend to this day. She's wonderful, and she won the Tony for it. And that's pretty much my history. I went on to do a lot of other shows, and my favorite show that I've ever done is a show that I just closed called Desperate Measures. It's a perfect musical. Everybody comes out loving it, all ages, all kinds of people. It doesn't matter who you are and what your age is, what your ethnicity is. It's just a wonderful show that everybody comes out happy. And yet it's not a dumb show. It's a very thought out show and has a lot going. In fact, one of the things, we saved a person's life, which I'm very proud of. There's a song in it called It's Good to Be Alive, sung by Connor Ryan, who is just marvelous. And he's in jail to die. He's going to be hanged unless somebody saves his life. So he sings a song, It's Good to Be Alive, and there was a young actor who was gay and about to commit suicide, and he saw our show and heard that song and decided not to commit suicide. And this is a true story because one of our cast members knew the person. And we'll never divulge who he is, but the fact is that that happened, and I just, it really makes me happy that shows can do that kind of thing. Theater is very transforming. And so anyway, that's my best story from that show. And it was the best cast I've ever worked with. Everybody loves everybody. It was a love fest. And I still get emails from everybody, even though we've closed. And it's just a wonderful experience. And I wanted to go and all over the world because it can. It's loosely based on Measure for Measure. A big improvement.
Well,
it's a big improvement. Anyway, so that brings you up to date. I'm excited about doing something that I'm doing not for money, for love. It's a takeoff of Women Doing 12 Angry Men, and it's going to be brought across the country. I'm not doing it across the country, but we hope that schools and theaters all over will do it. The idea is to get the female vote out. I'm a female advocate because the ERA has never been passed, and most women don't even know that, which is sad. We just need one more vote, and hopefully I will try to rally enough interest to get that one vote. And it's also getting women to vote, period, to get the vote out. And I don't care what your alliance is. It's important that you vote and realize your vote does count. Because so many young people, oh, my vote doesn't count. But if everybody has that attitude, you know, then your vote won't count because you're not voting.
Everyone did have that attitude for a short while, and look at where we are.
Exactly. And it's an honor to be able to vote. And until we impart that, it's not going to work.
Agreed.
Anyway, that brings you up to date.
That is marvelous. Oh my gosh, I'm sitting here stunned. I try, whenever I ask a question, I say, okay, imagine the answer so you can imagine a second question. There, I'm stunned. From the beginning of that to now, I'm like, wow, these were things I never knew. This is really amazing. I'm so impressed. I'm also thrilled. My co-host and partner in life, Mary Elizabeth McCarry, worked on Little Women, and I remember going to see it over and over again and loving it. I met Sutton Foster backstage. It was just an amazing show. Oh, I'm so thrilled that that was your producing maiden voyage
debut.
Here's
also
an yes.
I'm sorry.
No, that's right.
I just want to add something to the female advocacy, which I think is important because I think it's my mantra, and I think it should become a mantra across the board. Unanimously with women, it's 50-50 in 2020. And what that means is 50 parity in job opportunity and in salaries. And 2020 is coming up, and
right.
That's when women will have had the vote for 100 years. So it's 50-50 in 2020.
That's great.
And anyway, I hope
50-50 in 2020.
Right. I hope other people will use that mantra.
I will definitely put that in the commentary for this so that people have can write it down and remember it. Now let's go to the beginning and let's jump around a bit. Little Women. Now you're saying it's coming back. I'm really thrilled to hear that. I thought it was a wonderful piece.
I just read something. I was down in D.C. and I read something and I have not followed it up. I just got back from family Christmas, so I have done absolutely nothing. And I will find out about it. It's a little hard during holiday time.
Well, the whole world is elsewhere. The big scream now is wait till January, of course.
Right. So,
do you think Little Women would have? Do you think Little Women would have a longer run, a bigger life, if it was done off Broadway as opposed to on? You're a producer who's covered all these realms. You're not someone who's just a Broadway producer. You understand the art as a business very well. Do you think it would have had a stronger run off Broadway?
Oh, it's really hard to tell because that was back in a time when things were more affordable. But the biggest problem with off Broadway is that tourists don't want to go to off Broadway. They only want Broadway.
Yeah.
And I disagree with a lot of my colleagues who say, we need more theaters. No, we don't need more theaters. We need more audience.
Yeah.
And unless we develop more audiences, there's too much product out there that it's impossible to make money because there's just too much product. And a lot of people are giving the product away, and I don't even know how they get their money to do that. So I don't know that it would do better off-Broadway, because off-Broadway is pretty expensive if you go into a really good theater.
That's a good point.
And it you can't make the same money that you can on Broadway if you're a success on Broadway. I mean, Broadway has been giving tickets away for $39 on Broadway shows, so it's kind of difficult to try and figure out what's now and what was 15 years ago. It was a very different playing field. So I don't know. I don't think so. I think that it wasn't marketed properly. I think one of the biggest problems that I personally have is the advertising, the marketing, and it's just not really good. The PR also is not as good as it can be, because the tendency is to do the same thing over and over and over again. They don't want to think out of the box, because it's much easier just to call up all your buzz at Broadway, briefing Broadway this way, and you know, and they get the publicity, and it's easy. To think out of the box is hard.
But that's the same audience anyway. If they call up their old buddies, they're going to get the exact same thing. So they want new audience, shouldn't there be new ideas and new ways of getting the word out?
Exactly, and that's what we can't seem to get. Some of the artwork that I see, when I first started in this business, I was just appalled by some of the artwork. I still am. That is given. I mean, it would be class 101 that you should know not to put a dark writing on a dark background, because it doesn't show.
Right.
Or you have to make things large enough so that people can read them, you know. All of these things you think would be very obvious, but they're not always very obvious. And it's very annoying and heartbreaking, and you're paying these people money, and I get very frustrated. I was in the promotion field, so I worked with logos a lot, almost every day of my life, and I knew what could be clearly put on paper or wherever, and if something looked good small, and it was going to be lard, you had to make sure that it was good lard.
Of course.
You had to make sure if it's lard that it had to produce small. Well, people don't think about that. They think about one thing and they give it to you and then it doesn't really work. There are all sorts of things. Also, trying on the ABCs to have something with an A or come up the ladder so it's not way down.
Right.
On the ABC. And it's also good to have a title that people can remember rather than something complicated. Anyway, those are all little things that I feel are important. And they, of course, should be in place before you even have an ad agency.
Now you sparked a thought in me. You obviously because you've dealt in promotion, this is something that's on the front of your brain. You took to social media immensely for Desperate Measures. Every day I saw, and it wasn't mentions like come see the show, tickets are on sale, you get a discount. It wasn't as long as we're talking about not being customary. You were wide open. You were, what a great show. Oh, I'm having a great time. You had selfies with the cast and things like that. This is something we wouldn't expect of the producer. Tell us your thoughts on social media in terms of promotion, because you took a very personal stance with that show, which I thought was wonderful. What do you think social media is?
I don't think it did very much. So I wish I could say that it was more... we had a jail outside of the theater, but unfortunately, the way we were at a wonderful theater, New World Stages.
Oh yes.
But where we were positioned, there wasn't any place really to sell merchandise or have the jail because people came out of one exit and they just and that was the exit they had to go to get out, and they never saw. The other part of what we have, but those that did, and particularly those who came to wait for the cast because they'd come up those stairs,
right?
They would take pictures in the jail, and that was a big thing, everybody taking pictures in the jail. It was fun. I really liked that idea. When I did A Christmas Story, we had cutouts of in the bunny outfit, and people just loved having their picture taken, as Ralphie and Randy. And so we did that, and it was fun. And it sort of led to the big thing of social media. And look, I'll do almost anything to get my show out there. And this show was so wonderful and so special. I wanted to share it with a lot more people than we did. And I hope... you will see it across the country next year, all over. A lot of places want us. We're just putting it all in place now, and it's very exciting.
So do you
look for a Desperate Measures all over the United States and Europe?
Do you think social media, now social media, we say social, but every day ads pop up and every day we're charged for another thing. Do you think even in promoting place, do you think that sort of heartfelt usage, like the cutouts, like merchandising and things like that, do you think that's more effective than splashy ads, than links to discounts and things like that? In other words, that's more customary. You click to a link for a discount somewhere. Do you think the more heartfelt way gets more people in?
You know, I have no clue. I don't know. I wish I could be that wonderful guru who has the answer. I don't think there's any magic bullet. I think every show has its own heart and its own beat, and I think you have to try to find that heart and beat and the audience. The problem with our show is that our audience was all over the lot. Young people loved our show.
Mm-hmm.
Older people loved our show. People who studied Shakespeare loved our show. So we have, it was a difficult thing. If, like, Be More Chill, they know their audience. They have their audience. It's the young adolescents. There is no doubt older people hate that show. But
mm-hmm.
they're not going after Ben Brantley and older people. they're going after adolescents who know the show and love the show and want to see the show and see it more than once. So you're lucky when you know your audience that defined. It's hard. I think, honestly, too much is put on social media. We're bombarded with social media. Why would you want to watch my show versus another show? You have 20 minutes in between your office and going to dinner, and you're on your phone looking, surfing. You know, you can only do so much.
Of course.
And I think, you know, people are constantly rude at dinner, surfing their phone, seeing they can't live without it. Well, what did they do years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I think after a while, your brain becomes numb. So I don't know that social media has the impact that people want it to. I don't know. But I just think that there is too much. When you're bombarded with too much stuff, you can only assimilate a certain amount.
I worked with an opera director for years, and he was a much, much older man, and he didn't have a cell phone. And at one point I even said, silly me, I said to him, "Maestro, you know, I needed to contact you. How can I contact you if you don't have a cell phone?" He says, "When I get home, you'll call me." And I said, "What do I do until then?" He said, "Do you really need to speak to me while I'm crossing the street?" And I always remember that. So when you say we're bombarded by it, it makes the same sense. It's probably why I enjoyed yours, because if I'm looking at yours, I'm looking at you speaking. I'm not looking at 10 other people who are running your social media campaign. I'm listening to you speak, which was wonderful. You said, you made a point of saying, you have to know the heart of the show. You have to understand the audience. When you choose a property, here's the big question. When you choose a property, what gets your heart? What makes you look at something and saying, okay, that one's for me?
I wish I could define that. A lot of people ask me that question. I don't know. It's just what hits me for various reasons. When I was in London, I saw War Horse and I saw 39 Steps. I saw other things too. I was over there for, I guess, the opening of Spring Awakening. Mm-hmm. And I saw 39 Steps and I said, I want to do that. I saw War Horse and I said, I want to be part of that. It's just, I can't explain. It's just, it hits a nerve chord and I want to do it. Eclipsed, I wanted to do it because I knew I wouldn't make money, but I thought it was an important show to do. I thought it was a very important show. And I still think it was a very important show, even though it got great reviews and should have won the Tony, but lost out to The Humans.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, a lot of people don't want to see things that are not pretty and are nasty about society, even if it's not our society.
But we got to say it anyway.
The world society
is
pretty nasty. And a lot of times people don't want to see that or don't want to hear about it. And they also feel that it has no need. It's taking place in another country, Liberia in this case. What do I care about Liberia, you know? And so it was not a huge success. It was with Lupita Nyong'o, who was, you know, a famous young black star. And it was a fabulous show. But a lot of people didn't want to see that subject matter.
But you did.
Yes, I thought it was an important show. I thought it was a very important show, and I still feel it's an important show.
Now, you have said twice already that, okay, I didn't do it for the money, which again is another thing that makes people blink in general when we're talking about the theater. So for you, it's following your heart. For you, it's looking at something and saying, that's the message everyone needs to see. It's not something Jim Kierstead said, which was very clever. He'd said some people will write a play, and if he said, well, what do you think of the play? He says, well, I don't care. I want to see what other people think of it. And he says, but what do you think? You wrote it. What do you think? Oh, no, other people will like it. and he brought up the same point. It's like, what's in your heart? It's you want a message to be seen. That's number one, and in some cases only, to get a show onto your desk, is that the message needs to be said.
Well, I'm not saying most producers do it the way I do it, and it's just the way I am. And I mean, I've done some things that I thought might make money, and I want to be part of it. One thing that I was part of that I really believed in, and we wound up winning a Tony, was Vanya, Sonia, Marsha, and Spike.
Mm-hmm.
And we won a Tony, and I just thought it was a wonderful takeoff on Chekhov, and very clever and funny, and people need to laugh. And at that point, I was, you know, thought that was the best thing I could do. So different things have different reasons. I'm complex, let's put it that way.
Excellent. I think that's great. I think that really is great. You've given me so much to think about, let alone our listeners. Ms. Addis, thank you so much for speaking to us today. I'm not going to take up any more of your time. It is wonderful speaking to you. Have a joyous and happy new year. Yes.
I thank you for allowing me to say all that I did. And anytime you want me to talk for you, I'd be glad to.
Oh.
And I thank you for the privilege.
You're going to regret that. Yes, I'll be on the line many more times.
Okay.
Joyous learning experience. Thank you so much. Have a joyous
You're
holiday,
welcome.
And I will chat with you in the new year.
Okay, great. Bye.
Ciao.
And now, and I do love saying this, a word from our sponsor.
Would you like more people to attend your show? At Applaud, we combine artificial intelligence and human intuition to expand your audience and increase ticket sales. For a limited time, we'll help you fill your seats free of charge to prove our value. That's right, we will promote your show at no cost if you begin right away. Sound good? For more information, email promote@applaud.com.
Applaud lists, promotes, markets, and reviews the best of indie theater. You can't get applause without Applaud. Okay, Jim Kierstead, when not watching his own shows, you know, like Waitress or Kinky Boots or the plethora of productions that bear his name, he can be found at the Midtown International Theater Festival, the Planet Connections Theater Festivity, and many other indie destinations. But don't take my word for it. Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Kierstead.
Hello.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jim. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so sorry. It's been a weird morning today. I was, like, stuck in a cab, and then I was in my apartment, and I realized, like, oh, my God, I'd better, like, run out and get in the car because I have to be somewhere at 12:30. So I ran into the car, and now I'm there, so I can talk for as long as you want if you have time.
Oh, very good. Very good. Okay. Well, if I'm on the line, you're on the air. We'll edit out the beginning part about your harried morning.
Yes, please.
How are you? How's everything going?
I'm great, Jay. How about yourself?
So far, so good. Can't complain. Getting ready for the new year.
Good. Me too.
So the Passion Pit is a program that talks to people who support or are involved in independent theater. So it's ironic that I'm talking to a Broadway producer about this, but my knowledge of you is that you don't turn your back on anything. You go quite forward, but you also support independent theater. Tell us about yourself. Tell us about Jim Kierstead.
Well, Jay, you're absolutely right. First of all, I do support independent theater because the way I got into this business was about 20 years ago. Some friends of mine were working on a new piece. They were writing a new musical, and they needed some help financially and just, like, you know, somebody to help them out and do some running around and anything that producing involved. So I did that, and I was just doing it as sort of a one-shot deal, just help these folks out. But I fell in love with the process so much and helping to develop new work that sort of became my passion for the next, like, almost 20 years now. And it started out slow, but it was really great because I was able to get in on the ground floor of a lot of new projects that just spoke to me, and I was able to figure out what I liked and, you know, the type of work that I liked to be involved with. And that involved, you know, being a part of shows that were in festivals and doing readings of them and whatnot. So I only got into, you know, investing in Broadway along the way, and I started being a co-producer and, you know, hopefully developing a couple of wanted to ever give up on the idea of working on a small scale to start to understand what your piece is and to help new writers develop their work. So I'm definitely very committed to independent theater. I think that's part of the whole process.
So independent theater essentially gave you your start.
Yeah, indeed.
There's this great myth about there's such this huge chasm between off and on Broadway, but you're proof positive that it can go further. What's going on with you now in terms of Broadway? What will have your name on it in 2019?
Well, I'm really excited about this upcoming season. I mean, it's so funny. Every year that goes by, I say, all right, well, you know, I've done a lot of great things working on Broadway, but I really want to just focus on some of my things. But this year happens to be the biggest year ever for co-productions on Broadway. So we've got Pretty Woman that started this past summer. We've got American Son that's on right now with Kerry Washington that goes through the end of January. And then I have three new shows that I'm working on as a partner coming up in the spring. And that's going to be More Chill. That's making its transfer from off-Broadway from the summer, from its sold-out run at the Signature.
That's
and
great.
We've got Ain't Too Proud that's going to be there, the Temptations musical, which we're really excited about. And then we've got Hadestown transferring in from London, from the New York Theatre Workshop, when it was a couple of years ago, and now it's the National in London. So that'll be starting in late March. So we're really excited about those as well. And I've got to go over to London, actually, early January. We've got a show, it's a small chamber version of Andrew Lloyd Webber's Aspects of Love. It's going to be at the Southwark Playhouse from a really great 5-star run at the Hope Mill Theatre in Manchester, where I'm partners with the artistic director over there, and we do a lot of work together. So we're bringing that to the Southwark. And then we've got, you know, Dreamworld is closing and Kinky Boots is closing in the West End, but we've got Waitress opening up, so it's going to be a busy early part of the year.
So you can you transfer from London to New York in terms of productions and vice versa as well?
Yeah. We just did a show that I've developed for about 6 years called Unexpected Joy by Bill Russell and Janet Hood. And that was at the York Theatre Company. That was in their spring season this past April. It feels like it was yesterday, and it's already like almost going on a year.
Yeah,
so
tell
we did
me about
that
it.
There, and then, I know, it's crazy. And then we did it in London at the small theatre at the Southwark Playhouse in September. So that I did with, you know, my partnership with Katie over there from Hope Mill. And this is going to be our second production together. We had done Yank a few years ago and just realized we have kind of the same taste and are very much in sync. So we decided we wanted to formalize that as a partnership. So that's our next endeavor together.
That is terrific. Now, in terms of independent theater, now I knew you from a production you had at the Midtown Festival several years ago, and we reconnected with a phenomenal run of Dead Brains at Planet Connections. What keeps you coming back to off Broadway? What keeps you coming? You have the ability, let's just say, to workshop a show wherever you want it. What keeps you coming back to the festival circuit, to off Broadway, to workshop productions?
Well, you know, for me, I guess, you know, we definitely could do it wherever we want, but the nice part about a festival is I like to, it's kind of like, I would say it's like going on a date with a new piece. You want to know all about it before you commit to it. So it's a really nice way to put it up in an inexpensive manner, really focus on the piece rather than like bells and whistles of an expensive production. And you get it in front of an audience and get, you know, some limited reviews and whatnot and see it for yourself before you go into it in a very big way. And I'm such a firm believer in, you know, trying something out, getting to know the personality, and then you can decide what it's best suited for. I've been doing TV and film lately as well. And sometimes a piece is more suited for film, TV, theater, and sometimes there's a really nice cross section. So you can have a life in some of those, in several of those mediums. So I'm definitely a believer in a theater, in a festival, and I think it's a great learning experience too. When I talk to new producers, I always say, like, just do something in a festival, get it up and going, and you don't have to do it in a big way. It's sometimes more of an education to do it in a small way.
Do you think doing an open workshop, as I'm calling it, for when you do a production off Broadway, you're inviting an audience, you're inviting reviewers, etc. Do you think that is a better way of deciding if a project is good than just a regular reading and inviting industry colleagues? Do you think that shows you the viability of a show better or worse?
Well, you know, I think that it's two parts. If I was just starting something out from scratch, I would very much, if it was small, you know, like if it's a big musical, that's a lot harder to do, right? You can't do that under the radar very much. But if you've got a nice little play, and you've done a couple of readings of it, like when we did Cover, the show that you're talking about before, we had done a couple of readings of it and whatnot, so I felt pretty comfortable that I was excited to see what that would be like in a more fleshed out production, even though it was still very bare bones with black boxes and whatnot. But we put that before the audience. I wanted to see how would that audience react to it. And I invited a lot of industry professionals to it, but it was fun because they got to see something other than people at music stands. And when it's a play, I think that, you know, if it's a musical and you want to do that at music stands, you really do get a pretty good idea of the music. And that's such a key part of a musical, obviously,
to be able
to love that music. But when you're doing a play, I love to see, you know, how it can be blocked and how the interaction of the people can work. So seeing that up on its feet a little bit more fleshed out, I think, is very valuable. So we had a great experience at the Midtown Festival, and, you know, a lot of the industry people really responded to it. And it was just fun to see the audience's reaction to it, too. So I enjoyed doing that there as opposed to a reading or something like that.
That's great. But you made a point of saying that you had preliminary readings first before putting it before an audience. Do you endorse that? Do you think that no matter who's writing it, no matter what kind of show, it's good to hear it over and over and over before opening the doors to a crowd?
Yes, I think you must. Like, you can't, to me, I would never want to put something up that I didn't know what it was. You know, it's like the old lawyers thing of don't ask a question you don't know the answer to. And I wouldn't want to put a piece up and see it for the first time while others were there, because, you know, that's just a recipe for disaster. I want to feel very confident in what it is before putting it before an audience. You know, and if other people don't like it, if I do, then that's one thing. But I wouldn't want to put it up and realize, like, oh, I actually don't like this show very much.
I just had another interview with Joey McNeely, and he just did a musical off Broadway. He did a musical called Shadows, and he worked on it for 9 years before putting it up there. So I gather you're also of the proponent that this show needs to be great before you open the crowd. Like you just said, you don't want to be sitting in a full house to find out you hate your show.
Yeah, that would be pretty tough. And you know, this business is such that 9 years, I mean, it's funny when you talk to new playwrights and new producers and you say, well, you know, this show sometimes take like 9-10 years to do. They look at you like you're crazy. And if you just worked on a show 24/7 and it took 9 years, I'd be a little concerned.
Yeah.
But that's not the way this business works, right? Everybody's got a bunch of projects. Everybody's really busy.
Right.
It's hard to nail people down when you start to try to get regional theaters involved. Their schedules are out maybe like a couple of years, so it's hard to get a slot. And then it's just kind of simmering on the back burner until it bubbles to the surface again. So, yeah, these things can take a long time, but it's not just because people are working on it straying. You know, they sort of put it aside and come back to it and think about it. So it's a good way to let it just sort of simmer.
So another philosophy of yours is multiple projects.
I've had many
who dedicate to one play and they stay that way for 2 or 3 years, and I'm like, well, don't you get bored? So you kind of look at juggling many projects at once as well.
Well, I'm a really good multitasker for whatever reason. Like, I can handle many things at once. But the thing for me is, like, if I just had one project and I realized, oh, it's going to take 6 months before this gets seen or gets our next reading based on people's availability, then I wouldn't have anything to do. So I like to have a lot of things going on at any given time. Unfortunately, then it's sort of you have to manage multiple priorities after a while. But I can usually see my way through to do that. But yeah, I'm a firm believer in having lots of projects.
I completely agree on that myself. I find, I'm wondering if you agree, I find that one project feeds another. If there's a delay for 2 or 3 months and you have another project, you might actually learn something from that second project that's going to fuel the first. Do you find that adding lots of ingredients to your life makes for a much better project in the end?
Oh, I definitely do. And the fun part about it, too, is a lot of times just by sitting with something for a while, even if you're not actively working on it, even if it's just sort of in your subconscious, I tend to think a lot. So I'm always thinking about, you know, a project, even if somebody says, like, well, you haven't done anything with it for a few months or whatever, I'm like, well, just because you haven't seen me doing anything doesn't mean I'm not thinking about it all the time. And then you kind of come up with great ideas that you might not have had you just jumped without giving it some thought. So I definitely think being able to sit with something for a while is super helpful in getting to know what you're dealing with and really giving it all the thinking that it deserves.
And what you learn from one project ends up helping another, I gather.
Oh, definitely. You know, it's like, and I think that this business is so important about when it comes to relationships. You know, it's all about people and, you know, the theater community, especially in New York, tends to be very insular. And I think that people have to get to know you after a while. And, you know, it's like if you want to get a slot in somebody's season, having relationships really helps because, you know, these artistic directors are getting hundreds of scripts a month. And, you know, to be able to read through those, and it's easy to have things sort of fall by the wayside. So if you kind of know them a little bit, you can go in there and give them a nudge and say, you know, what are we going to do this one? And I think you get a little more notice than if you were just somebody cold submitting a script.
That's very true.
It's not an easy thing to do. So yeah, I think the relationships are super important to be able to kind of hash it out like that.
There's a story of Michelangelo staring at a big piece of granite, and one of his colleagues walked in and said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I'm working." And all he was doing was staring at it. But when, in the end, it became David. So there you go.
Oh, God.
Let's talk philosophically. How does working on so many projects and being involved on so many levels change you? Like who does Jim Kierstedt become because he has 1, 2, 3 projects going on Broadway? He has another project in the West End, and now he has 2 more that he's workshopping at festivals. What's the learning process for you when at the end of the year, as here we are? When you look around at yourself, what does it do for you? How do you feel about all of this?
Well, you know, I think that people in the theater business or any art type of business are very fortunate. You know, it's not the easiest thing to do, but I think we're very fortunate because we get to do what human beings are sort of put on the earth to do and need to do, and that's create things. And, you know, as a producer, you're not the person necessarily who's writing the piece and whatnot, but you're also making it happen on a lot of levels. And, you know, what I love to do is work with artists and, you know, whether those be the writers or the directors or even the actors, and try to help, you know, get obstacles out of their way and enable them to do their best work. So what I'll do, you know, right now I'm working on a 4-character play that I'm really excited about, and that's for Broadway. And I found it in a 1-act festival several years ago, and after the play was over, and I went with no expectations. I was just going because a friend of mine was in one of the 1-acts, not even this one, and I went up at the end and I said to the writer, I said, "Would you ever consider turning this into a full-length play?" I said, "I loved it so much and I want to see more of it." And he said, "Yeah, that would be great." So we sat for the next 2 years and collaborated. And all I want to do, you know, my best way of collaborating with him is to give him a safe space to create. And when I read his work, you know, we had to build a relationship where he felt comfortable showing me like his work and talking about it with me. And then what I would do is I could give him my perspective on it, you know, and if something felt like unclear or I was looking for something else, you know, but the point was I had to buy into what he was doing first, and he had to feel safe with that in order for me to give him meaningful input. And that's sort of what we've been doing for like a couple years. So we end up becoming, you know, very good friends and amazing collaborators. And we're about to do a cool industry read of that with our director, who's Cheryl Kaller, at the end of January. And I just think it's a really special piece. But that came about because of our relationship. And I think that that's what I love doing as a producer, and what it gives me is to be able to help other people create, let me be a part of that. So no matter what the project is, whether it's a Broadway show as a co-producer where there's less, you know, involvement creatively, but there's certainly involvement with raising money and being a cheerleader for the show and whatnot, or these shows that I find and try to develop from the ground up, I'm just happy to be a part of what people are doing and their art, and that makes me feel really good to be able to help get that out in the world and have that be a legacy, you know.
You are very accessible. When one thinks Broadway producer, one thinks, you know, that office that you just can't get into because there's five gatekeepers, but you are very accessible. Do you find that helps? Do you find that the creative process is better because you're a nice guy? Do you find that the relationships that you are fostering with playwrights makes for a better show?
Well, thank you. I mean, I hope I'm a nice guy. I mean, I hope it's very nice to hear that. But, you know, at the end of the day, I guess I'm just being me, right? It's like I'm just treating everybody here the way I would. I come from a business world. I was an information systems director for a company for like 30 years. And I just kind of like worked with people and collaborated, and, you know, to get things done, you had to treat people well, but also know what you need to get done and be able to plan well. So I sort of do that. I mean, theater producing is a business when you think about it that way. It's just a different type of a business and, you know, different sort of a product that you're creating. But yeah, I just treat it like anything else as far as that's concerned. And I just want to treat people with respect, and I want to be open, you know, and it's like, if the project's not for me, I'll be honest and I'll say that. And if it is, then I'll work on it and do my best to make that happen. So you know, I definitely think that being accessible is important to anybody, right? Because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm happy to be the dumbest person in the room. I think the best idea wins, and I want to hear everybody's ideas and say, and I don't want to have just one idea that I want to do because it's mine. I want to do what works best. So, you know, the best idea wins, and I want to hear
brilliant.
Them all.
That's brilliant. All right, here's the biggie, and every listener's going to lean forward to hear your answer on this. What do you look for? As you mentioned about the best idea in the room, what do you look for? And you also went backstage to another show because it interested you. What do you look for in a project? What makes you say, I got to find out more, I got to do more with it?
Yeah, I wish I had 100% of a great formula for that. I think I think there's some key components. But first and foremost, it just has to be an interesting story to me. I never go and second guess. I just go by what I like. And, you know, sometimes, so many times I hear people and they talk about a project they're going to work on, and I hear about it, and I'm like, oh, I don't respond to that much. Let me ask them why they like it. And I say, well, what is it that you like about the project? And they'll say, well, I think other people will like it. And then I say, do you like it? And they say, well, not that much. It's not really my taste, but I think other people will like it. And I say, well, why would you think other people will like it if you don't? So I'm just about, you know, finding things that I respond to and get excited about, because, you know, when you're talking about a 10-year time horizon, you're going to spend a long time working on that. So if you don't like it, that's a long time to do. But I like things, you know, just if I had to boil it down to some core ideas, though, I really love any project that talks about diversity. I like stories that tell, you know, people overcoming something. I like people being stronger and learning lessons at the end of the day. And I just think that in our world, you know, we have the opportunity, we've got so much going on with our politics and religion and, you know, all the differences that pull people apart. And I don't believe in political debates. You know, like I think a lot of people in our country right now are going through separation with their families and friends because we've got such an unusual political climate where people are sort of separated. So I don't get into debates because I don't find that works very well in changing people's minds. The only way that I think that I can think of to change people's minds is to put a piece of entertainment out there that has a message that doesn't jam anything down somebody's throat, but maybe makes them look at something from a different point of view. So that's the kind of material that I respond to. So if I can find something that I would be proud with a great message and is also entertaining and put it out in the world for people, you know, I think that even if it gets them to think a little bit differently for a few minutes, I think that that's a win. because I don't think that fighting with people works.
No, it doesn't. That's I completely agree. Jim, thank you very much. This was wonderful. I will take up no more of your time. Have a terrific new year, and I look forward to hearing a million things about you in 2019. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jay. It's been my pleasure. I really appreciate you taking the time, and happy new year to you.
Thank you. Same to you. I will talk to you soon. Ciao.
Thank you. See you later. Bye.
My thanks to Ms. Pat Addis and Mr. Jim Kierstead for once again being accessible for information and inspiration. Speaking of information, next time we'll chat with Bob Ost and Marcina Zakaria, two prolific playwrights who work with organizations that help open the door to the arts for indie artists. Until next time.